Okay, welcome everybody to January 12th, our second class today. I'm still in Virginia, attending virtually here. I hope everybody can see me. Hi. We have a special guest, Lucas Castro, today to tell you about his experience with the North Dakota Weather Modification Project as an intern. Before we get started with the class, are there any questions? I noticed most everybody went and attempted the quiz. Was there any issues that anybody had with the quiz? Any questions about that? And for the people online, you can post them in the chat or monitor that today. It's a little bit harder when you present to monitor both of that, but if there's any questions online, just put them in the chat anytime here for Lucas. And if you're in the classroom, you're welcome to log in and do that also, or just raise your hand. I'm going to tell everybody to just interrupt Lucas when he talks. So I see no one's hand goes up, huh, Lucas?
Nope, we're all good here.
All good. Okay. I haven't put it on the website yet, but there will be another 5-question quiz that you will have to do before the Tuesday class. And it's not posted yet, but we have the questions. I need to put it on there. So I will promise to get it done by the end of the day tomorrow. So you'll have at least the weekend, Monday and Tuesday. So we're a little bit late getting that posted. But please check, and I will try to make an announcement on the Blackboard site when that's available. So it'll probably be a similar format and stuff. Maybe I'll let you again take it multiple times, and then at some point we might change that to only once or something, and I'll try to put that in the directions for the quizzes. Okay, what I want to start out to talk about a little bit is I talked about the flight we did on Tuesday, which I posted the flight track on the class website. So today I have a screenshot to share. So let me share my screen before. Okay. So, and I can't quite, Yeah, this is pretty good, huh? So this is the, we're going to have a flight takeoff in about, 6 hours from now. 11 p.m. Eastern time. We are doing our first coordinated flight with the ER2. Does anybody remember Fred Reamer on Tuesday asked me about the ER2 aircraft? So does anybody just shout out what's so special about the ER2 aircraft?
It was a Cold War spy plane.
Yeah, and what altitudes does it fly up to?
70,000.
Yeah, so there you go, 70,000 feet. So this is a flight track. They're going to take off in Georgia. And I have the radar, modeled radar data at this time. So just like in weather modification projects, we use models to plan our flight tracks and weather forecast to plan the takeoff time. So the ER2 takeoff is 10 p.m. from Georgia. This is their flight track, and they will just go up the East Coast from Georgia, and then we have this line that extends from the warm sector of the storm where there's rain up into Canada, and we're going to fly back and forth along this line. And then our P3 that I'll be on will take off from Virginia and fly pretty much north and pick up this line. So anybody have a guess on if we took off at the same time and got up to this number two point here, which is, or number three, when we're getting up here, we want to be coordinated. What's the takeoff time difference between the two airplanes? Can anybody guess? Tell me, maybe raise your hand and tell me which one has to take off first, ER2 or the P3?
P3.
Okay. A lot of people say the P3?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, it's the ER2. They got a longer distance. They do fly quite a bit faster. But the if we were going to meet up there and we both took off at the same time, the ER2 would be 15 minutes or so behind, or a little bit more even. So so it's quite a bit different. The problem with the ER2 takeoff tonight is there's thunderstorms in the area. They need to field a plane. They need to hit the pilot in the aircraft. And so they may have to delay because they may get may not get all that done with the weather with the 10 p.m. plan takeoff. So we've scheduled it to be early as possible. We're thinking that the weather will, if it's favorable, they can get off at 10 p.m. If not, they may have to delay in half an hour or even an hour, which is going to cut into our operations because of their duty day. And we're planning an 8-hour duration P3 flight. So we'll go back and forth along these lines many times, and we might switch it. So if anybody's up tonight and can't sleep, come and watch us on the aircraft. I stopped sharing that. Does anybody remember what the tail number of the P3 aircraft is?
November 426 Alpha.
There you go. Exactly. So put that in FlightAware, and I don't know the ER2 one. But I think you could probably grab that from the NASA website. So any questions about our flights? And we're going to study the winter snowstorm. It's not the best, deepest, low, and the most intense snow, but it is of interest. They should have some snow up in Canada. Any questions about flying and the research we want to do?
If it's it doesn't work out this time, will you just schedule another time and the study will take longer?
So the question, I guess, was if it doesn't work out that we get off tonight or are able to do this mission, would we do another one? Yes, we are doing a field project. So both of these aircraft are available to the science team until the end of February. So we hope to do maybe up to 100 hours of flying or more on a P3 between now and end of February. So we hope to do many flights, 10, 12, possibly. You know, when you think of 8-hour duration flights, you could do obviously 12 flights would fit in with 8 hours apiece. So the next one is going to be planned for early morning on Sunday. This storm is to develop redevelop a coastal low pressure system, which may give quite a bit of snow in New England, but the models are not very solid or very uncertain on exactly where and what type of precip and where the low is going to form. So we have plans, and they already have the area that we would fly on Sunday planned out, and tomorrow they would give Singer a flight plan, kind of like what we saw here. So check us out Sunday morning if you can get up, or if you're still not up. That well would not be maybe a takeoff. That's 2, 3, 4 o'clock a.m. in the morning for that. So, other questions? Okay, I stopped sharing my screen. With that, I'll give it over to Lucas Castro for the rest of the period. Please ask questions, interrupt, raise your hands, put them in the chat. Lucas was an intern last year for the North Dakota Weather Modification Project. He's a student at the University of North Dakota again. He's going to be graduating this spring. So with that, I'll let Lucas talk for the rest of the period, and I will hopefully be flying back on Monday and see you all in person on Tuesday.
Sweet. Thank you, Dr. Lane. So hello, everyone. I'm Lucas. I guess a couple other introduction things. I'm kind of your guys' pseudo TA. I won't be teaching a whole lot unless Dr. Lee needs me. So if you guys also have questions about the class in general, feel free to email me and I'll try to work best I can. Like Dr. Lee said, I was on the pilot side of things for this past summer with the weather modification project. I'm a purely an atmospheric science major. My aviation background is a little bit different. I've done all Part 61 for my commercial multi and instrument rating. So it's interesting getting to fly with a lot of UND pilots because that's not something that I'm used to in a lot of the 141 training. And I hope that the other pilots that I got to fly with this summer also thought it was interesting meeting Part 61 pilots. So if you guys also have questions about that world, I know it's very different from UND. And likewise, I will probably come to you guys with questions about your 141 training and stuff. So yeah. So last summer, I did the projects, just kind of going over some overview with the project stuff. So we typically have a District 1 and a District 2. You can kind of think of them as their different kind of boundary areas that we operate in. They're based on whatever counties that are participating. So I was District 2 last year. I was stationed at Stanley. We have Watford City. We have Williston, Stanley. And then in District 1, we have Bowman. There's two aircraft in Bowman, which I believe is seed 1 and seed 2. I was seed 4 again in Stanley. Seed 7 is where the King Air is. And then what is that? Seed 5 is going to be in Williston. So these are just kind of different areas that you could be staying at through the summer. It's kind of, if you do get selected to be a pilot, you get to put in kind of whatever your first choice is going to be. And then Kelly, who runs the project as well, or is one of the managers for the project, will try to work with you based on what district you want to go into. Something to know about operations, and I will towards the end of the semester be speaking to you guys again, but actually simulating a mission. So I'll pull a case study from last summer that we did and ask you guys how you would approach the storm and how you, you know, go about seeding the storm. But one of the things to note here in kind of the bottom left-hand side of the picture, we have these red boundaries essentially that kind of border the counties. Those are areas that we can kind of go into in order to broadcast seed or essentially anticipate a storm coming in, but we can't normally operate in there. So I'll go into more of like the logistics aspect later into the semester as well. So here, let me move this out of the way. Okay, so some of these pictures are what we actually operate. So the two different types of aircraft and the historical flight averages by year. For the historical averages, the top one was this past year, so we averaged about 285 hours. The previous year was 252 hours. However, generally, that you can see there's a general decrease in our operations time that we're performing and flying throughout the summer. Most of the reason for this is because previously we used to have counties that would include like Minot and kind of those regions. But because we're a public entity, the public can vote if they want to continue the weather modification project. So over the years, more counties have decided to opt out. So it's kind of restricted our operating area, which is why you see kind of a decrease in hours as well. There's also been a general dry trend for the western half of the state across the, say, the past 5 years. So that also kind of inhibits how much seeding time we can actually do. And so this actually shows you the amount of hours on the left-hand side there for how many hours each seed got. So seed four, seed five, since we're larger counties, we usually get a lot more time kind of coming in. And general flow throughout kind of that region also favors seed or district two. The King Air also got quite a few hours, around 68 hours. But yeah, and then some of the operations too, I'll talk about. So wherever you're stationed, if you get selected and you get put on seed four, seed one, everyone gets turbine time. So as an intern, you'll get rotated into the King Air and you'll fly with the King Air pilot for a week. So I thought that was pretty cool. Again, never flown a King Air. Highest plane that I, or the largest plane I've flown was a Seneca. And then getting to get 12 hours of turbine time was really cool. So I thought that was, you know, pretty neat. And is a pretty good lure for a lot of you guys too. When you apply, you get to fly several different types of aircraft. It'll be aircraft that you've never experienced before. I know a lot of people here are solely used to G1000s. Everything there is by steam gauge. So it's quite a bit different and it's a lot of new types of flying, cowboy flying, if you will. But I'll kind of get into that a little bit. So those are the, and I should probably say those are the two aircraft we operate, the Seneca 2 and the King Air C90 or the King Air 200. So yeah. So moving on, just some pictures of the equipment that we operate. So on the left side is the Seneca 2. This is actually the plane that I flew, 39655, and that's at Stanley. So we have AGI generators. If you get selected, they'll kind of go into more of the mechanical aspects of how it works. But essentially, when you're flying, you'll do a burner test where you light your burners. Essentially, when you ignite these, the little rod that's in the back here will ignite, and the solution that's inside of it, a silver iodide solution, will vaporize and come out as flames. So essentially you'll be flying around along a shelf cloud or along a thunderstorm, and you'll be dispensing a lot of this chemical by vaporizing it. So it's cool because you're flying around and you can actually see the flames constantly going throughout the duration of the mission. We also have these burn in place flares. Essentially there we have a little flare rack that you can turn a knob to, ignite it, it lights a flare, and it rapidly releases a lot of silver iodide for more, I would say, intense operations where you're doing more hail mitigation rather than precipitation enhancement. And then moving over to the King Air. So our Senecas are gonna be our base seeders, which I'll get into in a little bit. Our King Airs are going to be our top seeders. They have ejectable flares, which essentially acts a lot like the burn in place flares where you're flying much higher, usually about 18 to 20,000 feet. You're not core punching per se, but you're usually on the flanking or southern region of a thunderstorm. And you're flying through essentially developing towers, launching these flares. We also have a dry ice dispenser, which it's in the name, it dispenses dry ice that you press a button, same operation. So those are some of the equipment that we use by King Air and then by the Seneca. So moving on, these are just some pictures. The bottom one or right one here, the first flight that you'll have you get selected is doing your high altitude endorsement. So went out to the Fargo Jet Center and then we flew up 19,000 feet, did some emergency stuff, and you'll get your high altitude endorsement. This was after, I don't think it was too long of a flight, but that was just me refueling the plane. Another thing to get used to too is all fueling on the project is self-fueling. So that is something, I came from 61, so I was kind of used to doing that, but I know a lot of pilots here aren't quite used to that sort of thing. So that's something interesting. And then one of the other things that's cool about this project is you're not going to be talking to approach per se or center. You're going to be talking with meteorologists. So you'll have, I was at Stanley, we have an onboard radar site, but essentially I lived with a group of three guys. This one, Jacob, he rotated in from District 1, but the other two, Jay and Ben, were there for most of the summer. Essentially, their job is to, they get a radar screen that they sit in front of and they direct aircraft around the thunderstorm. So we'll have the radar going and then essentially give them visuals. They launch you or tell you when to launch. And you'll fly around the thunderstorm and get guidance from them and stuff. So another thing that's cool is you get to work with both a multi-crew environment and you get to work with a radar environment as well, a radar crew. So those were some of those pictures. Here's me trying not to look awkward. So the left-hand side here was when I was flying the King Air. One of the things too is you get an iPad, which essentially you'll track when you're dispensing silver iodide or when you're burning stuff. Where you're flying, it's constantly going to be tracking you. It tells you kind of the boundaries of the county that you're flying in. So usually you'll trade off on who's doing missions. That's kind of up to the discretion of your PIC. But I was fortunate enough to be with PIC this summer that we'd usually trade off. So the King Air pilot would usually handle the first takeoff. And then we would trade off on who's operating the iPad, but whoever's not operating the iPad is flying the plane. Another thing that's cool too, I got to actually land and take off the King Air several times. I think I had four or five landings. So that's, you know, something that you didn't think you'd get to do. So it's a pretty cool concept getting to operate that sort of thing. But yeah, you'll pretty much be in control of it. The top one is Tyler. He was the King Air PIC. He wasn't my primary PIC, but that's when I got rotated down in Swafford City. And then here was everyone on the crew last year, learning how the actual generator works. So yeah, there's some pictures there. These are some of the really cool meteorology pictures. A lot of people have like photos of one another. I am a meteorology nerd, so I had like two pictures of me. And the rest were all pictures of clouds. So left-hand side here, this is kind of what you're anticipating looking at. And again, as we get later into the semester, I'll do actually a case operation with you guys. But you'll have essentially the foot part of a thunderstorm and you'll be flying along this section, essentially burning the generators and your flares. And you get to see really cool things that you would not normally get to see. You're flying, you know, a mile, 2 miles away from a thunderstorm, or sometimes like right next to it. And that's definitely different here. I know you guys have to give 20 miles or you're not even allowed to fly. I don't really know how it works, but normally you would never think to fly near a thunderstorm, but with this project, you know, you're going to be flying right next to it. You're going to be doing not too dangerous flying, but it's very exciting. It's the type of flying that I really like to do. So again, on the bottom right-hand side here is another kind of shelf club. And then moving on. So this side, I had never seen this before. And I talked to some of my meteorology friends and they also had never seen this before. It was like a quad layer shelf cloud. Normally you only get like a double or a single layer, but essentially built on itself. One thing that's really cool about thunderstorms and you don't realize until you're flying next to them, they are really, really powerful. From where I was at right there, I was probably about a half mile to a mile away from the cloud right there. And I pretty much brought manifold pressure back to 15. I could actually kill the engine if I wanted to, and I was still climbing at about 800 feet per minute. There's another story, I guess I'll talk about it now, but one of the things to realize too, when you're kind of working near these thunderstorms is cells can rapidly pop up and develop and backbuild on the southwestern flanking region of it. And so my PIC and I were flying along that region and we were kind of going in and out of the rain shaft because it wasn't too strong of a thunderstorm and a cell developed right on top of us. And so right as that happened, my vertical speed indicator started, you know, climbing, and eventually it pegged out and I pretty much killed the engines, put it in a 45 degree bank, dropped about a notch of flaps, now still climbing at about 1,000 feet per minute. So just shows you kind of how intense these thunderstorms are and how fun a lot of the flying can be too. And you won't be the primary pilot. It's a two crew environment. So, you know, if you feel scared and you feel kind of nervous, your PIC who is the primary operator of the aircraft, you know, he's had training, he or she has had training, and they've also been flying before too. So something to just kind of keep in note there. I got two videos. They're pretty low quality. But some of the night operations we do too, because of the nature of the mission and our job is to essentially protect property and ensure that crops aren't getting damaged and stuff. And we can have thunderstorms develop at any time of the day. We're constantly on alert 24/7. You'll typically know, your meteorologist will give a good forecast and be like, hey, you know, we can have operations between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. is when we think things will fire. So you can get a phone call at 2 a.m., have to be out to the airport in 15 minutes and off the ground in 5 minutes. So a lot of times it's kind of a fire drill, getting to the plane, getting yourself off the ground and stuff. And by the nature of the mission, sometimes you're flying at 3 or 4 in the morning and it sucks, and it's nighttime and you can't see anything except for lightning. That was also something really new to me, is there's no lights in Western North Dakota. So essentially it'll be pitch black. You'll get the entire thunderstorm lit up, and then you can't see anything else for another 30 seconds, and you're expected to fly off that. So it's, if you think you're a good pilot now, by the end of the summer, if you get selected, you're going to be an even better pilot, because you're doing things that most pilots in the industry, both, you know, whether it be, they be instructors, whether they be, you know, professional pilots and stuff, a lot of people aren't going to ever have this type of experience or do something similar to what you guys are going to do. So with that, I'll play the first video. So as you can see, that cell, when it lights up, is about 60,000 feet tall. So we're flying towards it. You get periodic flashes of lightning, and that's all the light you get. And that's what your side profile looks like when you're flying. So I'll kind of let this video play out. But yeah, so it's a lot of crazy flying, a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. And I'm sure that's what you guys are here too. Let me go to the next slide. And then this was, I think, one in the King Air as well. So you can kind of see that we're approaching the thunderstorm. I think from, we're approaching it from the west. That's all I got, apparently. And things are lighting up pretty quickly. So the next two things I'll talk about is some of the research that I'm doing with WeatherMon. So again, I'm not in the 141 program that you guys are. So part of my senior project is I have to choose something to research. So that's what I did for my senior project, is I wanted to research how effective is weather modification. Because as we go through this class, one of the main kind of proponents against weather modification is that clouds are never the same, or thunderstorms are never going to be the same. So it's very hard to tell that the seeding that we're doing is actually working. So this is, I won't go through the entire presentation because it's kind of a lot, but the research that I'm doing is I'm using a supercomputer to simulate a developing thunderstorm and seeing the impacts of cloud seeding. So this past semester, I was working on just getting the supercomputer up and running and then working. I ran through the program itself, is called the CM1. It's essentially just a super idealized cloud resolving model, I believe is what it stands for. So what you're looking at here is I run this code, and it takes about 3 hours to run this code. By the end of 3 hours, it outputs variables or values essentially for each point or each grid space within the model. So this is by reflectivity. So this is at a minute into the model. You can, you know, there's nothing here. By an hour, you can see that the model is, or the cell has grown to a pretty large size, and then it's starting to split. By 2 hours, this is starting to have a nice hook signature, and then also a nice hail core. And then by 3 hours, the end of the model, really nice hook. I would almost say that there's probably a tornado there. And the previous cell has kind of gone off to the northeast. So that's reflectivity, which is just something that, you know, a lot of people can look at. But one of the cool things that you can do with this is you can isolate what's called hail mixing ratio, or essentially how much hail is at the surface. So we can see here, 10 minutes in, there's nothing. An hour in, this is a swath of hail. 2 hours in, this is a swath of hail. And 3 hours in, this is a swath of hail. So what I'm trying to replicate by the end of it is doing a test case where I don't have anything change, and then an experimental case where I'm running the same thunderstorm, because if I was to run this program again, it's going to do the exact same thing. I'm going to introduce ice nuclei, as you guys will learn kind of later throughout the class, and simulate a seeding event. And theoretically, what should happen is the hail should be reduced at the surface. So this swath should be significantly smaller because we did target cloud seeding operations on it. So that's what I'm working on right now. We'll see if it's actually successful. I'll let you guys know at the end of the semester. And so with that, that's everything that I have for my presentation. Some websites you can go to, this is posted. Email me there, Instagram, I got plugged myself. So yeah, that's everything that I have. Do you guys have any questions? Yes.
How many slots are there usually for the applicants?
Last year, so it's before my year, it was pretty easy to get selected. Last year was a challenge, from what I understand. So there was 5 interns, and I think almost the entire class applied, so about 30 people. As we get closer, once applications open up, feel free to come talk to me about some of the things to kind of boost yourself for, you know, being a good applicant. I will say it's fairly difficult. I don't know how this year will be, but just kind of going off of last year. So, you know, best of luck to you guys. Any other questions? Yes.
I'm probably at least away from applying, but I want to know what it's all about. What is required to apply?
So to apply, you need your commercial multi license and your instrument add-on. Before, and I got it changed last year because since I'm not part of the commercial aviation program, it was finicky to apply. Before, you needed to be strictly a commercial aviation student and have your commercial multi. Now, from my understanding, is you have to be an aerospace student, so that includes atmospheric science and possess all those ratings. Once it'll open up in March and it'll show you exactly what you need to apply, but you don't have to have your multi-engine right as you apply. You just need to have it before the start of the summer as well. And I did, if you guys are looking for training too, I did all my stuff at the Fargo Jet Center for my multi-engine, and I'm working on my CFI right now there. So, you know, I'm going to plug the Jet Center. Yeah. Any other questions? Operations? Yes.
How often do you fly? Like every day or like once a week?
It really depends just kind of what weather cycle is doing. Typically, I would work with the forecasters too because I have that forecasting experience. But it really kind of depends. You could see, you know, one of the busiest weeks was that I flew 4 or 5 days that week on operations. Let's say it's, you know, early August, which is typically you're going to start seeing a lot of your daytime convection kind of scaling back and not a whole lot of thunderstorms. I believe it's after a week, if there's no flying, you go up to do kind of a recurrent flight. So you'll go up, make sure the generators are working, fly a lap in the pattern, then land again, or do whatever training you need to work on. One thing that I was adamant on is I started off, and probably it'll happen for you guys too, I flew in the right seat, and that was my first time ever flying multi-engine in the right seat. So as you can imagine, landing and doing anything flying-wise in the right seat is a lot more difficult than kind of doing it in the left seat, or it's a lot of training. So that's kind of what my CFI or my PIC helped me work on, was taking off and landing and flying around in the right seat and stuff. So you'll be guaranteed flight time, but how active it is kind of depends on the weather. Yes.
Do you think you'd ever do it again from a meteorologist, from the meteorology intern perspective?
I should talk about where I'm trying to go with my professional career. So I really love flying. I love meteorology, but I love flying a little bit more. I'm going to be applying hopefully as a PIC. So not saying that I haven't even applied yet, but I'll be applying about the same time as you guys, but this time as a as the PIC for the aircraft. So maybe I'll get to fly with one of you guys. That'd be kind of cool. But where I want to go with my professional career is a lot of research-based flying. So WeatherMod is a great proponent into that field. It's also great for airlines too. I should say that. I'm sure a lot of you guys want to go airlines. When you go on your hiring board, either one of two things are going to happen where you're going to say, you're going to be like, oh, I saw that you did WeatherMod. And either it's going to go, I did WeatherMod too, X amount of years ago, and it's going to be a great conversation. Or the pilot or the hiring person is going to be like, what the hell is WeatherMod? And then you get to tell them, you know, I had to do a lot of decision making around thunderstorms, and I know how to navigate and maneuver around thunderstorms really well. So it's a very, very good resume builder for aviation. Where I'm trying to go with it, again, is I'll be putting in a package for the NOAA Peace Corps. So I'm trying to do more research-based flying. So flying for the Hurricane Hunters, flying for the NOAA Peace Corps. If I could get into the NASA flight program, that'd be awesome. I don't really have a desire to fly passengers around too much. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do. So to answer your question, it would be cool if that was an option, but I don't see myself kind of going into that field a whole lot. Yes.
So how many classes do you only
Yeah, sorry, I should probably discuss about that too. So when you're flying, there's going to be two primary missions. There's going to be hail mitigation and precipitation enhancement. The type of mission you are doing, hail mitigation is always going to take precedence, but like some values such as CAPE or other thermodynamic profile may not be conducive enough for like a full-blown thunderstorm. So on days where the county allows it, you'll be doing precipitation enhancement, which is essentially you're flying in little cumulus clouds, kind of core punching the bottom of it, lighting silver iodide, and kind of enhancing how much rain is being output by that single cell. That I would say I didn't do too much precipitation enhancement. It was mostly hail mitigation because the King Air kind of deals mostly with a lot of the precipitation enhancement. For hail mitigation, you know, that's essentially we're flying around along these intense thunderstorms that are developing, and you can be working on them for a long time. Longest mission that I had, or that I think the program had, was 12 hours of flying. So we had one aircraft on there for 6 hours. To launch another aircraft for 4 hours. You know, aircraft comes down, lands, refuels, you get back up, you're still hitting it. Because essentially however long this thunderstorm is over that county, you're gonna be on the thunderstorm the whole time, you know, hitting it with everything that you got. So nature of the missions kind of changes drastically too. One of the most intense missions that I had this past summertime was that 12-hour mission. I think I flew on it for about 6 hours. That one was pretty brutal because I didn't land until 4 a.m. and I was not capable of landing. My PAC had to take over because I had way too much, I was too fatigued. So that's another thing too, is managing your guys' stress levels, your guys' like how tired you are and stuff. But one thing to note when you guys, and I'll cover this more in an operational standpoint, but when you guys are flying around thunderstorms, there's three main things that we want to look out for. One, not getting struck by lightning. Two, not running into the hail because that'll damage your plane pretty quickly. And then three, getting stuck in the main updraft. If you get stuck in the main updraft, you really screwed up. It's pretty hard to get to that point. But lightning, essentially, we're trying to mitigate how much you're getting hit by lightning or if you're going to get hit by lightning at all. One of the main areas that can happen is if you're up in the Anvil, which you're not going to do in the Seneca, or if you duck under the main rain sheet. And my PIC and I were essentially trying to find that shelf cloud or what I showed you guys previously. We couldn't find it. So we decided to go under the rain shaft just to see if we can find some up or inflow there, essentially whatever's getting fed into the main thunderstorm. Well, we dipped under it, and a good indication for if you're in a lightning field is your headsets will start squealing because there's so much static buildup on the aircraft. We dropped under there and immediately our headset started squealing. And there was probably 50, 60 lightning strikes. None of them hit us, thankfully. And that's not something I would recommend, doing that kind of operations. But sometimes the nature of the mission, you know, dictates that you're going to push your safety bounds, you're going to push your comfort zone a little bit. So that was one of the most intense missions that I did. I think that night we had 5 or 6 thunderstorms all come throughout into the county. So it was constant. We'd stay on it until it leaves and then immediately hit the next one and essentially kept doing that. So a lot of fun flying. I really liked it. I can't recommend it anymore, but so those are your two main missions that you're going to be working on. Any other questions? Yes.
How long were you based out there this summer?
I got out there, project starts June 1st. You're going to have like a ground school that kind of teaches you about the flying that you'll be doing. You'll meet your PIC and stuff. That's going to be 2 days beforehand. So I left May 28th. I got back August 16th. Your PIC will hopefully and usually typically work out housing and stuff with you. So it's going to be a while while you're out there, but and talk to anyone on the project. Almost everyone's had a blast doing it, especially on the pilot side of things. So. Yes.
How often did the regional restrictions get in the way?
What do you mean by regional?
For the counties.
There was a week where we really should have been doing, or a couple of weeks where we really should have been doing precipitation enhancement. But the county kept, for whatever reason, saying, no, we don't want precipitation enhancement. I think because it was harvest or something like that, or getting ready. I don't know, I'm not a farmer. But It wasn't a whole lot. It's like if it comes to hail mitigation or hail operations, they're almost always going to approve it because no one wants hail damage. So it's pretty rare that they interfere. And then you can't fly out of the county. You can't, that's like a big no-no, is that when you're seeding these storms, you can't go into the next county over if they're not approved for hail mitigation. So the moment it starts to leave, you can work on the side that's still in your county, but once it fully exits, you can't touch the storm anymore. Yes.
Were there any frustrations with that where you saw related candidates for seeding or hail mitigation that were in other counties they were able to touch?
Yeah, there was a lot of, they would hit the northern portion of the state. We had some two or three like ginormous, they were probably dropping 3-inch sized hail, which is, if you get hit by that, it's gonna kill you type hail. We couldn't touch them. So essentially whatever is in your county, you can work on, but if it's not in your county, can't be touched. So any other questions? Yeah, I'll go to him first since he's young.
Do you know how expensive it is for these counties to pay for flood and
The cost breakdown, if you go to the NDCMP website, I believe they, because it's a government agency, they have to list all that. Again, it's pretty expensive. One thing I should also note too, and this will be, unless you guys are CFI, this was one of the coolest aspects for me, you get paid to do this. So this will be your first flying job that you'll be getting paid for. And it's cool to say that, hey, I got paid for not being a CFI, because I know that's kind of the main road that a lot of people take. So you get paid, and then obviously the Seneca is a fairly expensive plane to operate an hour, and the King Air even more so, but all of it's paid for. So I know all the funds come from the county, which is why they have the right to kind of decide yes or no to do it. But yeah, it's pretty expensive, but I don't know the cost breakdown.
Lucas, can I jump in there?
Yes, go ahead.
It's a 50-50 share between the counties and the state. And I think the overall budget's something like $1 million a year. If that makes sense.
Out of my pay grade. did you have a question?
Yeah. What do you do there when you're not flying?
So when you're not flying, it's a lot of downtime. Usually you'll be prepping chemicals. So we have like a chemical shed where you're making the solution and getting things prepared. When you're not doing that or cleaning the aircraft, I don't know, I would usually stay home, play guitar or something like that, or it's kind of your own time. So, you know, when you're flying, you can kind of hang out in the local area. I would go to the gym a lot with some of my friends or some of my roommates that were there too. So your time is how you make it. You just got to be there for missions.
Yes. Is there like housing and board, or is
that all? The housing and board is up to your PIC and up to you guys. So my PIC, I think, paid for like 60% of the house, and then there were six guys in it, so we all kind of split costs between us, and then groceries is kind of on you too. So to my knowledge, it's, I forgot what the base pay is now. I think it's either $15.75 or $14.75 an hour, and then you'll be working 40 hours a week. So whatever that comes out to, $2,000 a month roughly. So you should have more than enough to cover housing and stuff, but. Yes, to my knowledge, you can still apply for it if you graduate in the spring. You just have to have those qualifications, but you can go on to the NDCMP website, which I have linked to here, and it'll, once applications open up, you can look at the requirements. I want to say off the top of my head, actually, you can look at the requirements now, but the application process won't be open until March, so around there. Any other questions? Yes.
When did the application deadline close?
I think it's like a 2-week period. So it's once it opens, like pretty much immediately apply for it. They will take a long time to get back to you. I applied, I think, in early March, and I didn't hear back until like May 1st. And then you have like 30 days to get your stuff ready. So it's a very quick turnaround, or slow turnaround. And then it's a quick, like, process for getting ready for the project and stuff. So, just keep that in mind too. It's going to be a little bit of a longer application process. Any other questions? Yes.
My just application.
So there's going to be an application. Your application is going to be screened. And then once it's screened, then they're going to narrow it down to like 5 to 10 applicants. And then you're going to go in for the interview process. Again, once you, if you guys need help with any of that too, just, you know, let me know and I'll help you guys. I'll just tell you what like questions they asked me last year and stuff like that. And I can help you guys best I can. So any other questions? Okay, sweet. Well, with that, I will turn it back over to Dr. Lane, see if he has anything to say. But if not, then you guys will be free to go. But let me see what Dr. Lane says.
Some more questions. Let's see if there's any questions online. Anybody put anything in a chat? And I don't see any questions on the chat. So it's great you had the questions there. So I guess you're, you know, it's kind of interesting because we're doing a night operation tonight. You know, we got to be careful with the fatigue that you mentioned. So at the end of the class, that's one of the safety issues that we'll probably talk about. And we'll talk about a lot of the things you discussed today. How many night operations did you do versus daytime operations, do you say?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many night missions there were. I want to say it was like probably 70-30 daytime operations to night operations. Usually daytime summertime convection is going to be the main trigger for like thunderstorms. Nighttime, you need a few more things in order to get a thunderstorm to kind of fire off. So you're typically going to see more daytime operations than nighttime.
Yep. And do you try to shift your sleep schedule based on the forecast if you have to do them night operations?
So that's what you should do. I did not always do that. Sometimes I'd be up to like 2 just hanging out. So for your guys' sake, try to get a good night's sleep. Especially if you do know ahead of time, if I will say there was one or two missions where they said there's a possibility of like 4 to 6 a.m. that we're going to be flying, those nights I'll try to get to bed early. But sometimes they're like, it can happen from noon to like midnight. In that case, you know, just try to adjust best you can. So the recommended answer is yes, you should try to change your sleep schedule to it, but you know, life sometimes gets in the way of that.
How well do you think the forecasts provide information for doing that? Do you think the forecasts are good enough that you can adjust sufficiently?
I would say yes, the forecasts are good enough to know more so if you should be prepared. So if the forecast is saying like, hey, there's going to be a thunderstorm 6 o'clock on the dot, that's not a good way to approach it because thunderstorms could or couldn't fire off. But what your meteorologist will likely do is say, hey, there's a good chance something can happen, but these are the steps as to why that thunderstorm may not initiate in the first place. So any uncertainty in the forecast is going to be, you know, talked about by your meteorologist, and you'll have daily weather briefings essentially that you'll have to tune into from a meteorologist. But a lot of times you're going to have a good bet whether or not you're going to be flying or a good possibility of flying later that day.
Okay, you know, we kind of did this class where Lucas talked and kind of, you know, just discussed what's happening, and hopefully during the rest of the course, we get some more depth into a lot of this conversation we had today. So keep an eye out for some of the details, like we'll talk about how the generators work, we'll talk about how the forecast done, and then, you know, the theory behind how the seeding methods work. So I guess the other thing, just to remind you, that I will be posting a quiz, I will say in the next 30 hours. I don't know, I'll try to get it done tonight, but look for it at least by Monday morning and do that. So each one of these quizzes is a little bit different challenge to you to complete. So This one's not available right after the crash, so try to remember that to do that before class on Tuesday. Is there any other questions for me? And as Lucas said, he's the TA for the class, so you can ask him questions. He has office hours reposted and stuff like that. So if you want to have any questions for preparing for the exams and stuff like that, and that. But any questions for me, or else I'll just let you guys go.
Okay, well, I'll let you guys go. It was nice meeting y'all, and good luck.